Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I am Menas, and I've got a great show for you today. And I'm joined by a special guest, a debutant on the show. I was commentating with him recently in the New South Wales Sheffield Shield matches. It is Baxter Holt. He's played 18 games for the Blues, 9 games for the Sydney Thunder. Baxter, welcome to Cricket Unfiltered.
Thank you. I'm actually looking forward to this. Should be good fun.
Yeah, excellent. Great to have you on. I often call the Sydney Thunder the Chunder because of their dubious record in the Big Bash, but I'll refrain from doing that moving forward.
Nah, that's right. I'm away from them now anyway. So
oh, good.
All good.
You're a free agent.
Correct.
All right. So, Bex, how's your summer been going? I know you play for East. We've been commentating together. How's it been going?
Yeah, pretty good personally. Scored a couple of hundreds, which is always nice. Big tick off, that sort of stuff. Batting feels like it's come along really nicely from recent years. So got a bit more confidence back with my batting. So that's always a good step in the right direction. And then off field, been pretty good. Obviously, would have liked a few more opportunities here and there and the higher honours and higher teams, but it's the sport that we live in, the world that I live in, the job I picked with only one keeper in each team.
Absolutely. And tell me, what was it like stepping into the commentary box?
It was different, that's for sure. They asked me to do it before Christmas. I think New South Wales versus Tasmania at the SCG, and I was away in Adelaide playing, so I couldn't do that one. But then did two post-Christmas. I actually really enjoyed it. It was nice. A lot less pressure than playing cricket, that's for sure. Yeah, so it's a lot easier waking up in the morning knowing that you've got a day sitting behind a computer commentating than you do playing a game as well.
And did you find it difficult? Obviously, you know, you play with a lot of the players in the New South Wales team. I mean, you sort of probably have to tread pretty carefully.
Yeah, I found myself biting my tongue a few times. Usually you speak pretty freely around a cricket field and you can say whatever you want, but when you know that your employer is the team that you're commentating on, you sort of got to be a bit careful here and there.
Yeah, you did well. Sometimes I forget, you know, I'm on air and I just say stupid shit. So as long as you don't do that, you'll be fine.
Perfect. There's a long way to go though. So I'm sure I will eventually.
Definitely. Now let's get into the cricket news because a lot's been happening and a very interesting article today from Malcolm Conn in the Sydney Morning Herald. He's reporting that the ECB and Cricket Australia will team up at the next ICC meeting, which starts today, and propose minimum match payments for test players all around the world to help save the format and keep them away from, you know, T20 franchises around the world. And to give you an idea of the figures, so Australian players get about $20,000 per test match. Is that about how much you get for playing for East?
I wish it was.
Indian test players get about $27,000 a match. And a team like the West Indies, the players might get $5,000. Plus you put on top of that, you know, the Australian and Indian players be on huge retainers. They're making a lot of money playing test cricket. And Conn wonders if they get this off the ground, who would actually pay the players, whether it's the ICC or the ICC gives the money to the boards and they distribute it. But Baxter, I think this is a move in the right direction. there needs to be some incentive for young players coming through to stick with red ball cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a must. It really needs to be looked at. The only thing and concern there is where that funding comes from. Like you said, there's multiple different pools around the cricketing landscape of different things, broadcasting, media, marketing, all these pools that they can filter money through. But it's whether all the countries around the world can contribute that equally. And if it doesn't have to be equally, they've just got to contribute enough to withstand their part of the pie, really.
Mm.
But yeah, the other thing I'd like to say is maybe even go back down a level, because you got to keep the cricketers in at the state level. Because if the test echelon retire and move on or get dropped, which is the state of the game,
yeah,
then who have they got coming in after them? And you've got your likes of Fraser McGurk and Ollie Davies, who have done really well in the Shield summer this year, that they're probably going to get cash thrown in their faces to go to IPL and short tournaments around the world. So what incentives are we using to keep them in the game back home?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think Australia pays its domestic players pretty well. Like, you can make a reasonably good living, and you'd know, you probably know more than me, but, you know, the contracts are pretty healthy. But I wonder how that is sort of mirrored across the world. You know, what is a domestic player in the West Indies getting played, or Sri Lanka? You know, what incentive do they have to stay in first-class cricket? But I think if they could, you know, take a bit of the money that is generated from these all these ICC tournaments, like the, you know, the T20. I mean, there's a T20 World Cup every 2 years now. There's 50-over World Cups. There's Champions Trophy. If they could get a little bit of that money and distribute it into, you know, paying test payments, it's a good idea in practice. But Malcolm Conn makes the point, you know, it's very hard to administer something like this, and it's hard to police. So, as I said before, if you give it, does the ICC start paying players directly, which, again, I don't know if that's a good idea. Are you basically contracting players by the ICC to play test cricket, or are you giving the money to the boards and then they pay them? And how are you checking that all the money you give to the boards is going to the players as it should be? So I think it's murky, but I think the intention is good. I just wonder how it'll sort of iron out.
Yeah, I think murky is a great way to put it. I think that's a great start, but the domino effect that will come from it, I think it's a very big grey area. And if they do it to one person, they've got to do it to all. If it's endorsed by someone like the ICC, where if it's endorsed by different countries, they can elevate
everyone
it.
Has to buy in.
Yeah, if it's done by a singular countries, and they can elevate it at a rate that they're comfortable with and that their players are comfortable with, which will keep them in. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, if it does play out over the next couple of days, and what else they can bring in, other ideas going forward.
Yeah, because there's such a discrepancy now also in the amount of test cricket some countries are playing. And, you know, Shamar Joseph, at the end of his wonderful spell at the Gabba, said, oh, I'll be playing test cricket forever. You don't have to worry about that. And that's easy to say in the moment, but, you know, put a check in front of him for $500,000 US to go and play in the IPL, or play in another T20 franchise that might overlap with some West Indies test cricket. And that's very hard to say no to. You know, he's got to put food on the table. He's got to, you know, so it's hard to, you know, keep players away from that. So, but you know what I found interesting? So in Malcolm Conn's story, and, you know, it's funny, we think here about, you know, what the IPL is doing to cricket around the world, but, you know, sort of hadn't considered what it's doing in India. And they've actually put in measures now to try and keep more of their domestic players interested in test cricket. So clearly what's happening is, there are players growing up in India who are like, I don't really care about playing for India in tests. I just want to play in the IPL, be in our T20 side. I can make lots and lots of money. It's, you know, it's not easier, but it's a different path. You know, I think being a test cricketer is hard. They always say that. So as a result of that, India have now come up with a bonus system for players. So if a player plays at least 75% of India's tests in a year, they will earn a whopping extra $82,000 per test. And if anyone plays between 50% and 75% of Indian tests in a year, they will earn an additional $55,000 a test. So clearly they're trying to incentivize their young players staying in the Ranji Trophy and playing test cricket.
Per test, that's a massive extra bonus, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, it's interesting, and it's sort of the landscape of the sporting world, really. We see in golf, for anyone that likes golf, the battle that PGA and LIV Golf has experienced the last 2 years, where the PGA Tour is probably like our test tour. is it's longer commitments, more travel, more stuff that you've got to do, bigger training sessions. And the LIV Golf is 10 events and you get paid 15 times the amount that you would on PGA. And it just allows you different things like the IPL does to our Shield season or the test season. As you can see, I think the IPL is 6 weeks long. Our test summer, well, the guys are probably away for 300 days of the year.
Yep.
If it's a full test summer. So it's definitely, you weigh up things outside of the cricket landscape of how much you're willing to get paid to set your family up for generations.
Yeah.
The life you're willing to lead at the minute, and also those luxuries of time off and spending at home, because a lot of the guys don't see their family for a lot of time of the year.
Do you hear a bit around, you know, the professional cricket circuit that more and more players are thinking about sticking to, you know, the short form and becoming specialists?
I think it's a lot more inviting now than what it was probably 10 years ago. But I think the lucky thing in Australia, at least, is we're so loyal and so privileged that we want to play for the test matches and play for Australia, because we've grown up idolising
that's the pinnacle,
those guys, and we know that it's a pinnacle. But say, for example, a West Indian or Indian player who wakes up and goes, oh, this guy's being paid millions of dollars to play for 3 hours, it's probably a bit more incentivising than I've got to play 5 days for a $20,000 paycheck.
I guess, you know, Australian kids grow up about playing in the Ashes, whereas maybe that's, you know, there's not the same dreams around the world. I do think as well that if you can play for Australia, that sets you up for that T20 franchise career. Like if you've got that on your resume, then all of a sudden you become a lot more valuable to tournaments around the world. And I often, cricketers in the past are very limited with their opportunities. Get in the Shield side, play for Australia. And you know what? If you come up, you know, to a certain point in the system and the selector doesn't rate you and you don't get picked, well, bad luck, that's it. But now there's so many opportunities to play different forms of cricket. You know, you look at someone like Tim David, who's completely outside the system, has built a career and now an integral member of the Australian T20 side. I think, you know, with this complication has come a lot of opportunities for young cricketers, and there's probably more professional cricketers than ever.
Yeah, I think there's probably two good examples that come to mind straight away is your likes of David Warner, who started in the T20 and then worked his way up to Test cricket. And then there's the other side of that is probably Josh Hazlewood, who probably never thought of playing Test cricket. Sorry, not Test cricket, T20 cricket. Yeah. But because he's been so good and dominated at the Test level, and it's opened up so many opportunities and avenues for him to play in the IPL, which he has done for 4 or 5 years now, and get paid that amount of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, money's not the be-all and end-all at the end of the day, but it definitely does go a long way, and it's why everyone does it, whether you like it or not.
Absolutely. All right, so that was the news, so keep an eye on that. I know there's a lot of listeners out there concerned about the state of Test cricket. Well, now I want to move on. You know, it's been a few days since Australia's famous Test win in Christchurch, and Baxter, I wanted to ask you, Daryl Mitchell, the New Zealand player, after the Test match said their team won't be defined by the results. Is that how you normally play cricket? Like you don't think about the win or loss, you just think about the performance?
I'd like to say yes, but unfortunately...
you're not supposed to say yes
here. Yeah. Unfortunately, our sport is so performance-driven.
Yeah.
And that's what the currency is of whether we get paid the next year. So it's a big thing to say, oh, look, it's not up to win or loss in this singular test match, and it might not be. It might be a series or a couple of series, but at the end of the day, it's our performance that is our
currency. And you are defined by them.
And exactly right.
When they look at the end of a season, they go, how many runs did you score? How many games did you win? How many wickets did you take? I think where it gets murky is, I think as a player, and you might relate to this, you've got to try and stay level. Whether you're winning every game or losing all your games, you've got to keep yourself level so you can get your best performance. But you were still defined by your results.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mental anguish if you're trying to perform every week and it's not coming and you don't know what the answer is. But at the end of the day, I've got my review next Monday, and I'm sure as anything that they're going to sit me down at a table and throw my stats in my face and go, look, this is what you did this year. And it's just the reality of the job that we have. And it's sort of what you want, because it's the accountability that you hold yourself to. Because if you're willing to go a full season and not perform, then it's probably not the job or career that you want, really. And I don't know how long you're probably going to last in that career. It's like any industry and any business. If you're not turned up to work and performing, then you've got questions to answer to.
Yeah, I thought it was bizarre that Mitchell said that. A little bit like what Stokes has been saying around Bazball and stuff. They didn't come out too well. And he's been roasted across the Tasman as well, so good on him. Now, since the test, Joe Root liked a video on Instagram of someone talking about why Steve Smith shouldn't open the batting. Now, Andrew McDonald, after the test match, said that it's too early to judge whether Steve Smith is a good opener or not. He thinks it's unfair, and he was very soft on that. He wasn't really pushing back too hard, but just said if you picked any new opener after four tests, you probably wouldn't be making a big judgment on them. And he sort of intimated that the team's not set for the game against the next test match, but it's going to be tough team to infiltrate. So we're going to see a very similar team to what we saw at Christchurch. What do you think about Steve Smith opening the batting?
I think he's earned the right to bat wherever he wants. His record's one of the best in the world, and probably the New Zealand Test Series is probably a tough one to judge just purely because of their pitch circumstances.
Yeah, they weren't easy batting.
No, that's one of the countries around the world where they bring out green seams and it's good luck. It's fight for yourself and go for it. But it just shows how good the likes of David Warner was before this Test Series.
It's true.
His whole Test career of what he was able to achieve in the baggy green. But I think Steve Smith will perform. He will do it. He's done it for years, and he's just it's a nice way to do it. He's a genius at what he does and how he goes about doing it. So I'm sure that by the next Test Series in India, I think it is, he'll perform every game.
Yes. And look, if he heard any of this next New South Wales Blues training you see him, you'll be very happy with those comments.
Absolutely.
I agree. I'm sure he's an avid listener, by the way, but I agree with you. He's earned the right to bat where he wants. In the wake of the New Zealand series and those two test matches against the West Indies, I do have some concerns about the balance, and I think it's Khawaja, Smith, Manus Labuschagne and Green are all quite conservative, not defensive players, but they're going to rattle around at, you know, if we're lucky if Khawaja goes at 50 runs per 100 balls. But, you know, they're looking at, you know, their strike rates are going to be fairly standard for Test cricket, where it's your Headed and your Marsh that'll go at maybe even a run a ball if they're having a good day. So I don't know if the balance is quite right. It's interesting you brought up David Warner. You know, is Australia lacking that counter-attacking batter at the top of the order? You know, should Travis Head be up there opening so you can go at the new ball? Or do you go something radical like Head at three and you push him? I don't know, but my concern is not the individual players. Like, I think Khawaja, Smith, Labuschagne, Green, all fantastic, but I don't know if in the current combination it's working.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I reckon you could probably pick at it all day and have 15 different combinations if you wanted to. But I think what having Smith and Khawaja at top allows you to do is, if it comes off, then it gives you the freedom as a middle order to go out and express your way like Head and
They come in, the ball's off, the bowlers are tired and they can go off.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier for them to perform and do what they do when the ball's 20 overs old instead of 3 overs old. But that being said, I suppose what New Zealand's Test Series did show us is that everyone can contribute to a game, not three people have to stand up every time. I think the biggest thing with Bazball over the years is they've gone with the idea that it's not going to come off every game, but one day one guy's going to come off and it'll be great. Where we've saw the last couple of weeks in the New Zealand Test Series is Australia has three or four options that will come off every game, whether it's 50 or however many runs they score, but there's multiple people willing to contribute and they go about it their way, which is great to see. And I think that's longevity-wise for the Australian team is probably a real bonus.
Yeah, that's true. They just struggled with the big scores, probably. But yeah, you're right. Green stood up in the first test, Marnus, you know, in the second test, and then Carey's 98 not out in the chase there was fantastic. Bit of a debate going on this podcast during the week. I think Pat Cummins should have blocked that ball and given Carey a chance at hitting the winning runs and bringing up a ton. And everyone said, oh, but you know what, if Australia loses 3 for none? I think that's a loser's mentality. Like, Australia's not going to lose 3 for none. So, I don't know. It seemed to me you're a cricketer. Tell me, what's a cricketer's analogy? You're at one end, you're 98 not out, 2 to win. and your skipper's there and he decides to hit the winning runs.
Yeah, look, we always say team first and you want to get the win, but if you need to lose three for none to lose a test match, then I think you're in a bad mental space. So it probably would have looked like Pat was probably trying to block out the over and he just squared one for two and it was the unfortunate.
I don't think he was. He said he didn't even know.
No, it looked like he hit it pretty well.
Yeah. He smacked it. Like, yeah, sometimes you can't do anything about it. Bowler bowls a wide ball, the keeper misses it, and four byes, you win the test match. You know, as you say, an inside edge, but he smashed that one.
Yeah, I think it's also so reactive that in half a second you don't really have much time to weigh up all your options. Mm. But I think from Alex Carey's mindset, I reckon he's just really pleased that he was able to contribute in such a big way.
He's not going to say anything.
Absolutely not.
That's where I think the onus is on Cummins. Like, you've got to do what's right for your teammate. Because it's about, like, as you say, team first. So Kerry can't come down and say, hey, Paddy, just block this one. I wouldn't mind a ton here. Because then you look like sound like a dick. Whereas Paddy's got to go, well, I can see the scoreboard. But he alleges he didn't know that he was on 98, which is even worse. I just think, I feel sorry for Kerry because he deserved a ton.
I think the best thing there is it was the skipper at the other end. If it was anyone else, then you'd be asking the question. But now that it's the captain doing it, at least you know you're safe for a couple more weeks.
True, true. You're right. I mean, he's in Cummins' good books now. He said all the right stuff, did Kerry, but that was fantastic innings. So after that test match, it leaves the World Test Championship table in a good little position. So Australia in our second with a 62.5 winning percentage. India are on top with a 68.51 winning percentage. Then New Zealand and Bangladesh with a 50% winning percentage. But to give you an idea of the discrepancy in games, Australia played 12 matches, India 9, New Zealand 6, Bangladesh 2, Pakistan 5, West Indies 4. So this winning percentage, it's fine. It's a good system of doing it, but there's such an uneven spread of games in the World Test Championship table. That's probably where you'd question its integrity a little bit.
Yeah, when you sent me that screenshot before, I was confused reading it. Mm. I was like, how are we not on top when we've got 90 points compared to the next best, which was 20 points less? But I suppose it's sort of the way they've got to do it if they want to have all 8, 9 test playing nations in it.
They've got to make it like this so Australia can play 5 tests against England, but 2 tests against New Zealand, and it's just the way they're going to do it now.
Yeah, exactly right. And I suppose that over the long haul of a season, then they'll even out those scores. But when you see the likes of Sri Lanka at the bottom with 2 tests, 2 losses, it's pretty hard to see how they're going to get off the bottom.
That's right. And what if a team like a Bangladesh, and I'm just picking on them, but what if a team that plays a lot less games 1 year qualifies for the Test Championship final just on scraping a few results? Like, that's going to happen too. But Australia have India for 5 tests at home next summer, and then they've got 2 away in Sri Lanka, and that's it before the next World Test Championship final. So they're in a pretty good position. But it will all depend, I think, on the series against India next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And back to that table as well, it makes it interesting to see the likes of, say, Australia have 5 tests against India.
Mm.
It's obviously a lot harder of a series than what we had last summer against Pakistan and West Indies.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how they weigh those up, whether they're all equal, which they are on the stat sheets, or actually if they mean a bit more that you've actually played and beat India, who are coming first in that.
Doesn't, though. That's the thing. It's all just win percentage. So that's why Australia had to win that last match to just boost their percentage and give them a boost ahead of next summer. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to continue looking at the Australian Test summer.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm here with Baxter Holt, and we're talking about the Aussie Test summer. Just wanted to have a look at the figures from the tests over the summer. So Australia played six tests and lost just one. And I've got the batting figures here, and you cannot hide away from it. This is a very disappointing summer with the bat for the Australians, probably a myriad of reasons. But the leading run scorer over the seven tests, so five at home and two in New Zealand, was Mitch Marsh, 500 runs exactly at an average of 45.45 with 550s. Very good summer for him with the bat. I mean, if your all-rounder at six is coming in averaging 45, I think he's doing well.
And how good is it to see him do well, especially after the last 3 or 4 years where he wasn't in the test team, he was in and out of the test team, didn't perform the way he wanted to. Probably the biggest contributions he made in the last time he was in the team was probably with his bowling.
Yeah.
If anything.
True.
And then to see him get the opportunity when Cam Green got injured last year and actually take that opportunity and do what he's done the last 6 months, there's not a nicer bloke and more deserving bloke, I think, than Marsh at the minute.
No, not at all. And he does it at a quick strike rate, 73.31. So it's entertaining. Usman Khawaja was second with 447 runs. Disappointing average of 34.38, and he just passed 50 twice in 14 innings. Steve Smith, 365 runs in the seven test matches, average 33, just passed 50 twice, no centuries, again disappointing. Alex Carey, he lifted it at the end to 336 runs, average of 33.6 with 350, so that last innings does make things look a lot better. Manus Labuschagne, 325 runs at just 27 with 450s across the seven test matches. Where are you on Manus, Baxter? Are you one of those people that thinks Manus is sort of now actually reverting to the mean? Like his shield average is about 40 and now we're seeing corresponding test performances? Or do you just think it's one of those little lean patches?
I think it's probably just one of those little lean patches. He works so hard, and if I worked as hard as he did and thought about the game as much as he did, I'd drive myself insane.
Yeah.
Because I think he spends that much time in his head that it's probably no good for anyone else but him and the likes of Steve Smith. But the other thing is, reading off those numbers, yes, they're down, but I think probably a bit of fatigue might also be playing a role in that.
I think so,
like
too.
We've said, we've got 6 months off now between test matches. I think we probably had a week off or 2 weeks off for the Australian team.
Yeah, they've played like 20 test matches or 20-odd test matches since the beginning of the last Australian summer.
Yeah, you've got the 20 test matches, then you add on the one days that they've played, the T20s that they've played for those that played in the IPL and the T20 comps. They've probably only been home for 40, 50 days this year. So
and big series as well. So
massive series.
Touring India is emotionally draining. Touring England with those horrible fans, emotionally draining. A 50-over World Cup, a lot of intensity.
Yeah. Those India series, I think they spent 3 months in India, which is a long time to spend anywhere. But when you're, especially in India, when you're pretty much in a hotel room and can't really leave, and yes, you stay in a beautiful hotel and it's great and you're over there with fans
that
love it.
They were there for months. They went for the tour, some stayed for the IPL. Green was there for months on end.
Yeah, so it's a long time to be away from home.
So I agree with fatigue. I think that's definitely part of it. I do think the pitches were a bit spicier this summer all around the country, so that helped. But I still think if I'm India coming next summer, I'm going, okay, well, this batting lineup's vulnerable. And that's where I think there is a bit of an unknown. So we've mentioned fatigue, we've mentioned the pitches, but there is also the cold hard facts. Khawaja, Smith are getting older. Manus has been a test cricketer for a long time, which does mean bowlers start to work out your little chinks in the armour and they do start to work out tactics. And, you know, there's a real onus on these players to prove, or prove me wrong. So it's not an age thing. It's not that the fact that the bowlers work me out. I can get back to that past performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, they are coming probably towards the end of their careers over the next couple of years. We'll probably definitely see them retiring, unfortunately, for the Australian point of view. But at the end of the day, they can only play for so long. So they're definitely near the end than they are the start, for sure. It'll be interesting to see how much fatigue comes into it. But then the other thing is you think about they've got 6 months off, so their game preparation is probably not going to be as good as it was these last five series. But whether the time off equates to that, it'll be interesting to see. But also what they do about their games going forward. We're so lucky now with so much analysis work and research and videos that you can watch for days on end. And the likes of your Smith, Kawaja, Labuschagne, they change their technique so much that good luck for anyone to keep up with what they're doing.
I almost think they need to do the opposite now. They all just need to switch off for a while. Switch off from batting, put it all away, and then come back a bit fresher.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the guys have taken up golf. I know I'm playing with Smith tomorrow. Not sure how his golf game goes.
You're playing with Smudge tomorrow?
Yes, I'm not sure how his golf game's going to go, but I'll tell you after that. But
where are you playing?
Out Avondale. So
nice.
Which would be nice. So
just you and Smudge or a few of the others?
A couple of others as well, which would be great. So a lot of the guys are getting into their golf games, which is good. So that's definitely a time to get away from.
I was very lucky with your comments before then about Smith batting wherever. Right. It'd be very good.
Yeah. So maybe just release this after I play golf.
Well, I think you're safe now. I think I'll release it before. I'll be in a good mood. He'll be like, oh, thanks, Baxter. You backed me.
But yeah, there's a lot of time off coming. But I think a few guys are also going over to the UK to play county.
Which I think is fantastic.
As well. So they're going to get that match practice regardless of whether they're playing or not.
All right, last thing before we take a quick break. Bowling figures, though, I just have to say are exceptional. So the batting struggled. Do want to mention David Warner, 3 test matches, 299 runs, average just under 50. And there were so many pundits around the country who couldn't wait to get him out of the team. Well, his figures certainly look okay in the end. And with the bowling, though, leading wicket taker for Australia across the 7 tests, Josh Hazlewood, 35 wickets. Average of 15, strike rate of 36. That's phenomenal. Nathan Lyon, 34 wickets. Another season for him to remember. Average 19.79, strike rate of 39 for the GOAT. That's exceptional. Pat Cummins, 7 matches, 30 wickets at an average of 19.3, strike rate of 41. I mean, he's a third on this list with those figures. And then Starkey, Bit wayward, but 25 wickets, average just under 30, strike rate 47, the perfect variety bowler and scuff up the foot marks for Lyon. But that's, I think, the story of the summer is just how, and we've known for a while, but the fact that those four played all 7 tests, they are just probably the best quartet of bowlers Australia's ever had. I still think Warner and McGrath individually are better, but this quartet is unmatched.
Phenomenal, isn't it? You talk about the history books and all the quartets they've had before, and yes, they've been outstanding. But this four that we're witnessing now will go down the history forever, especially when you put them up against the likes of the other people around the world, but also the likes of, you say, Scott Boland, who probably would have played 50 tests 10 years ago.
So many bowlers.
And all those
around.
People that have just missed out, Michael Nesta. And
Chris Tremaine is for the Blues is taking a stack of wickets.
Yeah, exactly right. So you get all those likes, and you actually, when you say the batting stats before, you don't need massive batting stats to win games because they're just so dangerous and they've performed every test match. And even the likes of this New Zealand test match, you've shown how hard it was for New Zealand to win a game with those bowlers backing up.
As it was incredible.
It's also incredible to see the fatigue we spoke about before. All those bowlers have gone all year round. Yeah, they have had a few games off here and there, but for them to keep showing up and bowling with the amount of workload and force going through their body is phenomenal.
Yeah, and they do manage themselves pretty well. You've got the experience. They're so experienced now. I know they have said a lot that the fact that a lot of tests are ending in 4 days is really helping them. The fact that Test cricket is moving quite fast, certainly giving them more time to rest. But also, they're a bit like, I don't know, like a prized horse now or something. They don't bowl in the net so much. They don't bowl, waste many balls now. They're sort of just wheeled out for the big occasion. And with figures like this, it's no wonder why. I mean, I just think Hazlewood to be the leading wicket taker. It's not that I think Hazlewood's underrated, but I think Starks is sort of your flashy, fast bowler. Cummins is, every poster boy for Australian cricket. And you got the GOAT. Sometimes Hazelwood kind of just flies under the radar. He's, the quiet boy from Bendemeer. He doesn't make a big show about things. But I just love what he does at test level.
Yeah, exactly right. And perfect way to put it. He does fly under the radar. And that's the way he likes it as well. You don't see him doing too many press conferences. And I think he did one in the last two test series. Yep. He lives a very private life, which for him works and probably which helps him go about the life that he does. Pat Cummins does your marketing, your front cover of magazines.
Definitely.
That, which comes with the job.
Flashes the pearly gates.
Exactly right. And when you look as good as he does, you're probably going to do it anyway. And it obviously pays bills as well, which is great to see. But Josh Hazlewood has just done it for so long. He's so consistent and he just keeps coming back and keeps doing what he does so well. And then when you've got the likes of Nathan Lyon at the other end, then what bowler is a batter meant to take down in that lineup? When you've got those two and then you've got Cummins coming back and you've got Stark bowling 150Ks at you, it's probably not a pleasant bowling lineup to face.
No, especially not on some dicey wickets. All right, so that was the Aussie Test summer. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to talk about the announcement of the World T20 skipper for Australia and England getting absolutely hammered.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menas. I'm here with Baxter Holt from New South Wales Cricket. We've just run our eye over the domestic summer. Andrew McDonald announced at the end of the test match that it's very likely, he pretty much put it in pen, that Mitchell Marsh will be the World T20 skipper for Australia in the upcoming World Cup. No surprises there. He's done a great job in the games we've seen. And I think it's actually good to give Cummins a break from leadership. Just let him be a player and not have to worry about all the external stuff. So I think it's a very smart decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more, especially with the workload the captaincy adds to you and what Cummins had to go through the last 12, 24 months as captain. It's going to be nice for him just to sit back and remember what it's like to just play a game of cricket and not have to worry about media selections and all of that.
He might not even be in our best 11, Pat Cummins.
I think he's a tough one to leave out, especially with the experience that comes forward. But, yeah, it'll be touch and go.
Depending on the pitches. If they're real spinning tracks, that's where he might be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be.
My player's a batter. He's doing so well in chases.
Yeah, he's probably, well, I was going to say number one all round, but when you got Green, Marsh.
He's certainly the new Iceman. He's replaced Steve Waugh as the man for a sticky situation.
Yeah, he's done very well, hasn't he?
Now, wonderful news. Wonderful news for karma, wonderful news for world cricket, wonderful news for humanity, wonderful news for every Australian out there. India have absolutely hammered England. They win the series 4-1. In the end, England fluked a win in the first test. They got all cocky about how good baseball was, and then India pulled their pants down. I don't care about what everyone says about, England competed. Bullshit. They competed for like 2 days in a couple of test matches and they're making out like they almost won the series. They got absolutely flogged. And in the end of it, Stokes redefined baseball as players always striving to get better because no cricketer before has ever tried to get better. I mean, they are just the most infuriating bunch of cricketers I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's a different one. I love how passionate you are about it as well. It's great to see from a fellow Australian. But, yeah, it's always been an interesting concept, baseball and India's.
I'm just glad they got hammered.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and so is everyone, which is good. But I'm not sure if baseball can line up in subcontinent wickets. It's just.
Well, what is it? Like, they change their mind all the time. They're just full of themselves. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. They've sort of stuck with it for a test series, and it hasn't worked. And they were sort of half-hearted with it. The second test series, we see Joe Root now batting normally, which thank God for every cricket lover going around because he scores runs for fun. If he bats the way he does, we don't need him trying to reverse ramp.
No.
Bumrah, third ball of his innings. So it's good to see that they've given him a license to bat the way he does. And then if he bats the way he does, then it doesn't matter how everyone else bats. They can bat however they want because he's going to score at least 100, 150 runs for your team.
Yeah, he can bat around. They just need to drop all this palaver about them changing cricket because they're not. They're doing F all to change cricket. Couple of things from that test match. Johnny Bairstow played his 100th test match. I looked at his figures. There is no way he would have played 100 tests for Australia. I can't even believe England had picked him for 100 test matches. He might be the worst player ever to play 100 test matches. And when I pointed this out on Twitter, people were like, well, you know, he's played as a keeper most of the time. That's BS. He's played half as a keeper, as half as a batter, and he can't catch. So, I mean, you're a keeper, Baxter. I mean, like when you're watching Bairstow with his iron gloves, you know, dropping, shelling catches in the Ashes, he's got no technique.
No, I think it was probably one of the reasons that we won that Ashes.
Yeah, absolutely. If folks had been keeping in those first two tests, we're probably done.
Yeah, I think if you look back, he's probably dropped 10 catches over that series, yeah. Missed a couple of stumpings, and at the end of the day, that's probably what won us so many games.
He wasn't fit enough. I mean, you need to be fit. And then there are long days out there keeping at test level. And if you're not fit, it affects your concentration, which means you start shelling catches.
Exactly right. Not many people realise, but on a full day of cricket in the field, we do about 600 squats as a keeper. Mm. That's a lot of turmoil to put your body under. And to keep coming back, and then you add the mental fatigue of being able to watch the ball for that long, being switched on for 6 hours at least. Yeah. There's a lot that go into it. And for a split second that you need to be ready to take a catch, you got to be in the best shape possible.
Yeah, and Bairstow would just look, his eyes would wander. He'd see some bloke wandering back from the bar with a beer and a pint. He'd be like, I'd rather be that bloke right now. And it's just a vicious cycle. I can't believe he's played 100 tests, but congratulations anyway. Congratulations, Johnny. Jimmy Anderson, 700 wickets. Now, here's a very maligned figure. I thought 5 years ago he was done. As much as I want to hate the guy, it is incredible what he's been able to do. To be playing in his mid-40s, to be still bowling as well as he's bowling, to still be improving his figures, the fact that he's actually lessening his bowling average now as he's getting older is phenomenal. And it does make you realise that, you know, the level of professionalism in the game now can really significantly lengthen careers.
Well and truly, we probably spoke about polar opposites there for two guys that have played 100 test matches.
Mm.
You got Johnny Bairstow, who keeps doing what he's been doing, and then Jimmy Anderson, who keeps getting better. I don't know how he does it, but like you said, mid-40-year-old playing test cricket and doing as well as he does, that's incredible to even read about. You wouldn't think you'd read about it. It's like a movie.
And I think England have done well. I can't remember when it was. I think it was even around the 2015 World Cup. Around then, they sort of put a line through him as a white ball bowler and broad. And a bit like I was saying about the Aussie bowlers, like they keep them in the garage and wheel them out for the big games. And although, you know, Anderson and Broad never had much success in Australia apart from 2010-11, still Anderson across the world and at home has been exceptional. And 700 wickets for a fast bowler, the first fast bowler ever to do it. He's, you know, going to pass Shane Warne's wicket-taking record. He's got Morelli in his sights. It is one hell of an achievement.
It's unheard of as a fast bowler. You sat here probably 5 years ago and said the third or fourth leading wicket-taker in the history of cricket is going to be a fast bowler. People would have laughed at you and said, what do you mean?
Agreed.
One, how is someone in mid-40s still playing test cricket as a fast bowler? And two, how have they still been so successful without being found out?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and I was sort of thinking about some of my favourite Jimmy Anderson memories. I can't remember if it was 2013, 14 when Clark told him to get ready for a broken fucking arm, or whether it was George Bailey, who barely scored a run all series, smashed him for almost 30 in an over. Was it the 2-5-0 losses here and the 1-4-0 loss? I can't work out which of those is my favourite Jimmy memory. But anyway, you can choose, listener. You can choose. Now, the only thing I wanted to say about that India-England series is that we talked about Australia's batting before. I'm actually very nervous about what's ahead for Australia with India coming. We know how good their bowling is. Bumrah, Shami, Siraj, Ashwin, Jadeja. You know, that lines up very well against our bowling attack. But then we're going to see next summer Jaiswal, who scored just a lazy 712 runs for the series against England. Just a quiet strike rate of 80 runs per 100 balls. And Shubman Gill, 452 runs at an average of 57, 200s and 250s. You know, you add that to Sharma and all the other stars in that team. Hopefully Kohli will be back. We'll need runs next summer.
It's frightening to read out those stats, isn't it? Mm. And like you said, in the bowling fraternity they've got, Ashwin probably doesn't play in some of those test matches as a second spinner. So you've got someone of his calibre probably sitting on the bench running drinks, which is huge. And then those two names you read out batting-wise, haven't they showed the world what they've got?
Jaiswal looks incredible.
Remarkable. And the way he goes about his game, it was funny to see Dunkett, I think, came out and said, oh, it's Bazball's been great because we can see Jaiswal changing his technique.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, come on, mate. Surely.
Everyone did. I gave him a sledge.
The guy's remarkable. But then Shubman Gill, another one, he's the same year as me and played in my Under-19 World Cup against us. And he was a talent then, which was great. But it's great to see that he's got the opportunity. He's taken it as well.
Yeah, so this is making me nervous for next summer because I think we're going to find it very difficult. I think we're going to find it very difficult. I wouldn't be surprised if we get beaten again.
I think it's going to be a great test summer, though.
No, absolutely.
It'll be really exciting.
All right, now moving from the international scene to some domestic news. Now, Dan Cherney from News Corp is reporting that Jake Fraser-McGurk might be over at the IPL. I feel sometimes that it can be a bit soon for a player, and I'm concerned that it's a bit soon for Jake Fraser-McGurk. But, of course, he needs to take the opportunity. But I know the passe player like Josh Phillippe, he went over there when he had a good big bash season and didn't really do a lot for his career. I'd be just as happy for someone like Fraser-McGurk to go to England and, you know, find a club over there and just play on some shitty pitches and just sort of craft your game a bit more.
Yeah, I think the difference between the two guys you mentioned there and McGurk and Phillippe is Phillippe was going as a keeper that could bat or a batter that can keep. And it's so tough with the likes of IPL and the keepers that they've got already and the people that you're up against that you're probably not getting much game time. Where you look at McGurk, who's set the world on fire in our Big Bash, someone that is probably going to start in most of them games, you'd think.
Yeah,
possibly.
Stick him in the power play, and if he hits 40 off 20, he's done his job.
Yeah, so I think he's definitely going to get the game experience that Phillippe probably didn't get, which is a positive for him. And obviously he's going to get paid a mozza to do it, which is great for his financial safety and things going forward. I don't know how well he'd go in the likes of the UK, especially if he's playing longer format cricket. I know that he still wants to play test cricket for Australia, which everyone does. But his route to get there might be more like David Warner and the likes of those people.
Yeah. Well, South Australia tried that, didn't they? Opening with him in that game we commentated on, and then they dropped him down the order again.
Yeah, they did. And especially like Davey made a career going through the T20 circuit first and then test cricket, where McGurk might be the same if he still wants to get to the level of test cricket. He might go 6 years of being IPL and travel the world in T20 and go, nah, it's all right. I've earned enough money doing this.
It may be. Anyway, good luck to him. I do enjoy watching him in bat. And I had a good chat with him on the podcast at the Big Bash launch. He's a smart kid. I think he's got a big future. Our next news, you made the papers yesterday, Baxter. This is what it said. Phillippe is set to move east, shaking up the domestic wicket-keeping ranks with Baxter Holt and Jake Doran among those with clouded futures. So there's been a lot of rumours about Phillippe moving here for a long time. Again, it hasn't been confirmed. Well, what could you shed on this, Baxter? What have you heard?
That's a tough one because, like you said, I'm involved in it, which is never a fun or enjoyable process.
But did they tell you? Did you know the cricket say, look, this might be happening, or do you read about it in the paper?
Bit of both. Yep. The first time it was published, probably 3 months ago, I'd obviously heard wind of that it was possibility happening. And then recently, obviously, with a bit more media and our season coming to an end, I know what state I'm sitting at the minute and what's got to happen. But yeah, like I said, there is a domino effect. coming together, and it is all at the hands of Phillippe at the minute, unfortunately.
Right.
So it's going to depend on the next 2 months that probably determine my future, as long as a few others, which is terrifying and exciting at the same time, to have the opportunity to maybe start a new chapter somewhere else and get the opportunities that you felt that you may have should have had here or you could have had here. Obviously, I've played, like you said, 18 games for New South Wales, and I'm so loyal to New South Wales, and I'd love nothing more than to stay here and be close to family, friends.
Good answer.
I've got a mortgage here.
Hear that, Dave Lyle?
Yeah. So I generally do want to stay here, and I'd do anything to stay here. But that being said, the reality of our world, there is only one keeper in each team, and if I'm not being paid to play here, then I do have to look elsewhere. It's just the reality of it. And although, as much as I wouldn't want to, for the sake of family, friends, and the life I've got here, sometimes you just have to move for a job or what you're willing to do for a dream that you had.
Absolutely. Sometimes you've got to follow your dreams. So a couple of things. I guess, firstly, what's that like when, you know, you work so hard to go up the ranks and then all of a sudden you think, oh, someone's just going to come across the Nullarbor and just sort of jump in on top of us? Do you think, oh, I wish I'd taken my opportunities more when I had the chances and really made that not an option? Or do you just go, that's professional sport, I just got to cop it on the chin?
You definitely have nights of both. I'll tell you that for nothing. There's definitely nights where you lie there and go, God, what more could I have done? Mm. And then you look back, and last year I played 6 Shield games, and unfortunately a week before the Shield summer went back, I popped my shoulder out and missed games. I think I missed 2 Shield games, and I was ready to come back, and then Jilksy scored 90. Then obviously they stuck with him for longer and then did everything that was asked of me and what I thought I needed to do over the preseason. And unfortunately, they just went the other way with Jilksy this year. And as tough and as struggle this year has been to watch that and sort of be second string to anyone is always a tough spot to be in. But then you've sort of got to look at the positive outlook and go, look, this is the opportunity I've had. I've played 18 games for the state that I've loved and brought up in and dreamed of playing, and if it was to end now, then obviously I'd be disappointed, but I've achieved something that I'm number 751 for New South Wales, so I think we're up to 766 now. 766 people have, in the history of New South Wales cricket, have played for New South Wales and got that baggy blue, and I'm a part of that family, which is pretty special.
It's great attitude, and I guess on a personal level, what you were saying before, which I know I would struggle with, is the uncertainty, is, geez, you know, I'm really waiting for Phillippe to make it. Sorry, it's any name. I'm waiting to, you know, for this, you know, all the dominoes to fall into place, and you're sort of a bit powerless. Like, I would find that frustrating as someone that likes to be in control.
You know, I think the biggest thing that I've said a couple of times is I love Phillippe. He's a great guy. I've had a lot to do with him over the years. But if you look at his Shield record the last year, it hasn't been that great. And look, I hope for his sake that if he does move wherever he does, he takes it well by storm and takes over. But for someone sitting in my shoes, it's disappointing in a sense that I suppose they're looking to look elsewhere and willing to make their decisions and probably thinking that I'm not suitable for the role, which is probably the hardest thing to do. Obviously, when you've got a lot of long nights sitting at home wondering a lot, you go, well, could I have done more? Could they have done more? And then, am I not good enough? Am I worthy of the contracts I've had? So there's a lot of self-worth questions that come into it, whether it's actually worth going through all the physical training, the mental anguish, the physical anguish of living out this dream and career, to actually go, yeah, I think I am good enough, or I do think I've got what it takes to play state cricket and hopefully one day play test cricket.
Yeah. Well, will you go up? Will you have these conversations with, say, Greg Shippard at the end of the summer when you have these assessments? Will you ask him, you know, what were you looking for or stuff like that?
Yeah. So I think our review's next Monday, I think, from what people have said. So it'll definitely be a honest conversation from both parties, I think. It's been an interesting review system the last couple of years where they have 10 of them and one of you in a room and you go through one by one of what they think you could have done better, which is...
That'd be terrifying.
Intimidating. Yeah. Especially when you walk into a room, there's 10 of them sitting down, you're like, oh, this would be good.
Yeah.
But this year, from what I've heard, they're changing that structure up a bit, which would be nice. But no, it'll definitely be an honest conversation and some questions being asked both ways, I'd assume.
Yeah, well, best of luck with it, Baxter. I hope it all works out. I'm sure you'll pop up somewhere.
Yeah, I'll be around somewhere. You can't get rid of me just
good,
yet.
Good, good, good. I mean, you know, I think a lot of players that have moved to other states had incredible careers. So, yeah, it's certainly going to happen. All right, now, sticking with the Shield, an incredible finish has seen Western Australia pip Tasmania at the post to host the Sheffield Shield final for the third straight year. Just such a narrow difference between the two sides. The point difference is 0.57. So Western Australia finished 47.93 and Tasmania were 47.36. Going into this last round, it looked like Tasmania would host the final, but then WA beat the Vics by 138 runs and Tassie lost to South Australia by 134 runs. That means Western Australia hosts the final, and you would not write them off from winning another title.
Oh, absolutely not. If you asked me 2 weeks ago, I thought Tassie were home and hosed with a home Shield final, which would have been outstanding for them. I think we researched when we were in the comm box a couple of weeks ago. The last Shield final they played was 2017.
Yeah.
So for what they've been through the last 5 years, it would have been an outstanding story. But nonetheless, they're still in a Shield final, which everyone dreams of playing.
Big difference, though, between a green top in Tassie to a dry, bouncy pitch at the Wacker.
Yeah, it's tough to go past WA, isn't it? Mm. Especially with how strong and successful they've been for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Arguably, they've taken New South Wales' spot in being the best state, county, province in the world.
Oh, they have. They've just won so many titles at the moment. You can't go past them. It's an amazing run. New South Wales, they didn't have a bad end to the season. Actually, I don't know if they've won. They've probably beaten Queensland by now. But they just couldn't finish off South Australia at Cricket Central. And I was commentating, and at the end of this podcast, I'll put in the audio of me going nuts when Chris Green took a catch. It looked like New South Wales were going to win the game in the shadows of at Silverwater, and yet South Australia held on, which basically eliminated New South Wales for the season. But there is one huge positive to come out of this New South Wales season. Ollie Davies scored his third century of the season in that the game against Queensland that was just completed. New South Wales has been craving for a batter to break out. And for him to score 300s in his maiden summer, that is a phenomenal achievement.
Huge. And especially when we were saying on comms last week, for the last 3 years, he's probably been pigeonholed into a T20 up-and-coming player that probably won't play red ball cricket. And to see what he's done this year after giving an opportunity at the SCG, I think it was against Tassie, where he scored his first 100. To take that
WA, I think. I think it was WA.
Yeah, to take that opportunity first and foremost and score 100 there was remarkable. And then to then back it up a couple of weeks later against South Australia at Cricket Central, phenomenal achievement. And then to do it again now against Queensland just shows how talented and how hardworking he is and how good his game is to adapt to different formats of the game and succeed at those levels.
And I think a big tick to the selectors, a new selection panel's been brought in this summer. Stuart Clark, Jeff Lawson, you probably know who else it is.
David Freeman, Greg Mayle, Greg Shepherd.
Yeah, so a whole new selection panel that wanted to put more stock in performances at grade level, and they've unearthed a gem in Ollie Davies. They probably waited too long. In fact, they did wait too long because this performance indicates he should have been there last season when they didn't win a match. But he is a future Australian international, and thrilling stuff. All right, last bit of news. I just want to finish with the Women's Premier League because it is reaching the climax. So for Australia, Lanning, Mooney, Perry are all doing very well with the bat. Elise Perry's also doing with the ball. She took the best ever figures when she took 6-for-15 for RCB against the Mumbai Indians. Annabelle Sutherland, Tali McGrath, and Phoebe Litchfield have all had modest returns with the bat. But Jess Jonathan has bounced back after being dropped by the Australian team. She's making a real statement with her bowling for the Delhi Capitals. So, yes, Meg Lanning is the captain of the Delhi Capitals, and they have made the final. So they will be playing the winner of Mumbai Indians versus RCB. And in RCB, I mentioned before, Elise Perry. They've also got Sophie Molyneux and Georgia Wareham. So Meg Lanning's team are in the final, and maybe they could play Elise Perry's team, which would be quite a mouth-watering clash.
It's great to see how far that women's game's come and how good they are. They train so hard. They train harder than us most of the time. And a lot of people don't know that some of those girls actually have two jobs. So they're professional cricketers and then got to go work somewhere else. So the ability that they're able to play to and do what they do off the field is remarkable. But it's also great to see the likes of Sophie Molyneux there back playing after what's been an awful 12 months of ACL injuries and things like that. So she's come a long way, and to see her getting the rewards now is fantastic. Elise Perry continuing to do what she does every year. 6 for 15. And then wasn't it last game she broke two windows on
the car? Yeah.
So that was good for her. But no, she just continues to show how good she is in that format. And then the likes of all the other women in it as well. Extraordinary. Phoebe Litchfield's another one there that will play for Australia for as long as she wants to, currently, because she is just so good.
No, she's exceptional. Struggling a bit over there. And I'm really enjoying the way the Women's Premier League is growing every year. You can tell it's getting good support. Can't wait. The finals are this weekend. Tune in. Now, Baxter, the way we finish Cricket Unfiltered is with a segment called Can't Let It Go, which is anything you want to get off your chest. Now, I'm going to go first to give you time to think of one because I didn't pre-prepare you for this. But mine is, I sort of sat there on Monday at the end of the Test match versus New Zealand, and when it dawned on me that there would be no more Australian Test matches to November, I got a little bit emotional. You know, that's a long gap. I mean, you know, when we were so spoilt last winter with tours to India and England and then a World Cup, to have no Aussie Test matches until November next year, I'm sad about it, I've got to say. I'm very sad about it.
No, and fair enough. What are you going to do now?
That's a good point. I'll probably take a little break during the IPL, and then I'll start preparing for the T20 World Cup. I sort of like to prepare format by format. So, you know, get more into the range hitting and, you know, work on my variations ahead of the T20 World Cup.
That's outstanding. Big fan of that. I can tell you do a lot of training as well for it as well. Yeah. You beat the local Nets.
Absolutely.
With anyone that would go down with you as well.
Anybody. You know, anybody, as long as they're like really bad. What about you? Got anything you want to get off your chest? Or
I'm actually looking forward to a couple of weeks off.
Yeah.
A few rounds of golf, a few charity golf days, which are always exceptional.
Yeah. Maybe you could ask Smudge to come on the podcast for me tomorrow.
I'll let him know.
Yeah, just say, look, big fan. I actually So I started this podcast in 2013, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I released the first episode a couple of days before Steve Smith scored his first ever Test century, 2013.
Wow. So you're putting his success down to your podcast.
No. I just don't think it could, I just don't think it's a coincidence. Like, I think this podcast and his success are linked, you know, and, you know, while, yeah, maybe like, yeah, maybe my form's dipping a bit and his form's dipping a bit this summer. So, you know, we're sort of on this journey together, you know, a bit like him. I was averaging 70 for 4 or 5 years and dipped a bit last summer. So I don't know. There's something there.
You'll be back though.
I'll be back. Absolutely. You'll be back.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly not an eye thing. My eyes aren't going, that's for sure.
No, I'll let him know tomorrow.
My eyes are going. It's fairly hard to read some of those stats.
Yeah, how big is that text on your iPad?
Yeah, it's pretty big. And not big enough, though.
Yeah.
Well, Baxter, thanks for joining me on Cricket Unfiltered. Where can the listeners find you? Give me all your contacts.
All my socials are just Baxter Holt, my name. Keep it really simple.
Yep.
I've got a website, baxterholt.com.au, where I offer different services of coaching, speaking gigs, MC gigs, Q&As. Or any media or outlet like that. So, yeah, pretty simple. Name's Baxter Holt. You can find it wherever you need to.
Well, I urge listeners, if you're looking for a cricket coach, hit up Baxter. I had the pleasure of commentating with him, and he knows his stuff. So I tried to trip him up a few times in the commentary box. Didn't work. So big tick from me. Baxter, thanks for coming on the podcast. Take care.
My pleasure. It's been good fun. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with an old friend, Stephen O'Keefe. And here is that crazy call of mine at the Sheffield Shield match between New South Wales and South Australia at Cricket Central a couple of weeks ago. I kind of went crazy. Jack Edwards has been the hero today. It's caught! It is caught! What a catch! Diving forward, and New South Wales, a stunning comeback. And South Australia are 9 down. Johnson is gone, first ball. And Edwards will be on a hat-trick for the second time today.
Edwards stride in the crease. Take a look again. Four stump, nice delivery. That is an absolute beauty, that catch from Chris Green.
Diving in front of second slip. I don't think it would have carried to second slip. So they got their spacing perfectly aligned. And a stunning over from Jack Edwards.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.